Hello, everybody, and welcome to a beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I have a great show planned for us today. My guest will be Jill Talf, who is the owner of a wonderful Ayurvedic healing center on Long Island. And she is also an Ayurvedic practitioner. And I'll be having her on in a little while. But before I do that, I want to share with you some things going on in and around the city. Talk to you about some things going on in the news, and share a recipe with you, as always. So anyway, I'm so glad to be here with you. Yesterday was the Climate Action, People's Climate Movement's Day of Action. And it was a very successful day by everything that I can read. There were over 200 actions in over 47 states, or in 47 states. You know, these actions are going to continue all the way through the next couple of months until the climate talks take place in Paris. And so anytime you hear about the People's Climate Movement and you have an opportunity to participate in some sort of action, please consider doing so. We really need to build this movement. You know, there were over 400,000 people last year at the People's Climate March that took place in Manhattan, which built anybody's expectations of what they were expecting. I mean, the march was huge. I was there. The energy was wonderful. And we just got to keep that momentum up. I talk so often about how we need to really come together as communities and as a country and as a planet to let our world leaders know that the climate crisis is here now. We need to address it. We need to deal with it because all the other issues that are plaguing our society will be a moot point if we don't get this climate issue under control. So, you know, I was really happy to see that there were so many actions yesterday and that people are really taking this on in a very serious way. Talking about actions, I always have on my website ways that you can participate and take action. One of the biggest things that I'm really trying to raise awareness about is standing up to the bottled water industry. A couple years ago, there was a bill that was passed that banned bottled water from our national parks, and the bottle industry has been on a bandwagon to really reverse that that ruling, and I think they are having success with that. And so we really need everybody to sign these petitions to keep bottled water out of the parks, and yet to expand the bottled water or the filtered water filling stations, which are needed in order to replace the bottled water. So that way we're encouraging everyone to reuse either their plastic bottles, to reuse those, or to buy some really nice stainless steel bottles that they can keep refilling and cut back on those bottles. The amount of bottles that they have reduced over the last couple of years was astonishing, and it would just be really a shame to turn back the clock. And that happens so often. I mean, we're still fighting, you know, Planned Parenthood. I mean, come on. And, you know, we improved the school lunch program, and then, you know, the frozen pizza companies and the frozen French fry companies lobby and get us to reverse that. I mean, we need to put the issues that are really important first and profits for these other companies on a back burner. That is not what's more important than people's health, and we really need to band together and take these issues up and really do something about them. Tomorrow is a great opportunity to participate in a free lecture event at Stony Brook University. It's a forum. There's going to be lots of different panels on fossil fuels and children's health, and it's going to be an opportunity to hear lots of different panels talking about science, politics, families, and communities, and talking about curing diseases, what diseases are curable, what diseases are preventable that we didn't know were preventable, and it's just going to be an excellent event. It's actually, I'm sorry, did I say tomorrow? It's today at 4:30. So if you are near Stony Brook University, definitely go. Even if you're in the city, it's worth the schlep out to Stony Brook. And you can go onto their website to find out more about it, but it's being sponsored by the Sustainability Institute at Stony Brook. Also tonight, there's a bar and contra dance and dinner, which is also free, being sponsored by NOFA New York. It's taking place at the Halleckville Farm out in Riverhead. There will be food for sale and drinks for sale, but the contra dancing and the dinner event is free, and it should be great. I would be there if I wasn't doing a presentation tonight for the Babylon PTA. It's one of my favorite things to do, actually, is to go into schools and do a cooking demo for the local PTA and to show parents right away how quickly they can whip up dinner, whip up an after-school snack, how you don't have to give them kids cookies. You know, snacks don't always have to be sweets. They can be savory dishes, and you can whip together some nori rolls or some vegetable fried rice. I always keep leftover fried rice in my refrigerator just so I can do that. So I'm doing a demo this evening at a PTA. If you're part of a school district and would like me to come out to your PTA, please send me an email at Bhavani@IEGreen, and I'd be happy to arrange that with you. Also, starting tonight throughout the weekend, the New York City Wine and Food Festival is going on at various locations and venues. So you can go onto the website, just Google New York City Wine and Food Festival, find out more about that. Tomorrow, an evening in Tuscany, this is the rescheduled night from a cancellation that they did a couple of weeks ago when we were having a horrible hurricane storm. It's tomorrow night, October 16th, an evening in Tuscany out at Crossroads Farm in Malvern. You can go onto their website to find out more about that, or my website. I have all the information. Unfortunately, the Long Island Food Coalition South Shore Farm Tour was postponed until this spring. We just did not have enough people signed up to make it worthwhile to do at this time. So that's been postponed. October 17th, Slow Food East End is having a great event, Foraging Walk in Sag Harbor. And it's a great opportunity to go out and learn about foraging for wild foods. Right now, I know we're just talking about wild mushrooms that are growing. And it's a wonderful thing to do, to walk with someone who is really good at foraging and knows what mushrooms are safe and what mushrooms aren't. So you can go to the Slow Food East End website to sign up for that. October 17th, North Shore Land Alliance is having their Walk in the Woods. They have these all season long. This one is taking place in West Hampton at the Dwarf Pines Plains at 11 a.m., and it's a free event, but they do ask you to register, so go to the North Shore Land Alliance website to register for that. Food and Water Watch is having their 10th anniversary benefit on October 19th in the city. Go onto their website to find out about that, or my website. All of these things, by the way, are on my website. October 30th, there's a screening of the film Bag It. I saw this film before. It's a great film. It's being sponsored by United for Action, and it's free. It's at the Rutgers Presbyterian Church in Manhattan. So great, great film, and then there will be a talk afterwards with members Brad Lander and Margaret Chin talking about new legislation. So come out to that. What else? October 31st, there's a harvest dinner at Chin Estate Vineyards out in Matatuck. Great, great vineyard. All of their wines are biodynamic. Check out that event if you are free on Halloween evening. November 1st is the Fall Market Dinner at the Bell and Anchor. And that is a fun event as well. A little pricey, but definitely worthwhile. And, of course, Long Island Restaurant Week is coming up November 1st through the 8th, which is wonderful. Lots more events. I don't want to take the time to go through all of them, but always check out my website for up-to-date events. If you have an event that you'd like me to post on my website, please send that to me as well. So now I'd like to share with you my recipe. It's a vegetarian borscht. Another event I'm doing today also is I'm doing an end-of-the-season reception for Hawthorne Valley's local CSA that is, the pickup is at the Waldorf School in Garden City. And so they brought me a bunch of their vegetables that were left from last week's farm share, and one of which was many bunches of beets. I was, you know, in addition to, of course, roasting some beets for a salad with goat cheese, I was like, what else can I do with the beets? And I have decided to make this vegetarian borscht recipe that I just made up. It's great. You know, I looked at some other borscht recipes, most of which had meat in them, to get some ideas, and I'd like to share that with you. I made a big batch, but this is, you know, one portions recipe. It's enough to feed 10 people. Okay? So one onion chopped, 3 carrots shredded, 4 beets peeled and shredded, 3 potatoes diced. I wrote down red potatoes, but it really could be any. I used the Yukon Gold fingerlings that I had in my, you know, that I had harvested. I used those. 2 stalks of celery diced, 1/2 yellow bell pepper diced, 4 cups of shredded cabbage. I also had Napa cabbage here from the farm, so I that's the cabbage that I use, but you can use, you know, any kind of cabbage that you have around. And cabbage is great because it stores so well for the winter. 2 teaspoons of salt, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 teaspoons chopped garlic, 2 teaspoons oregano, 2 bay leaves, 1 can of organic cannellini beans. You can also use kidney beans or pinto beans. Really, any beans will work in this recipe. 1 jar of organic tomato sauce. I used a marinara sauce. 10 cups of water. 1 can of organic diced tomatoes. 1/2 a teaspoon pepper. 1/2 a teaspoon of red pepper flakes. Those are optional. I just put those in because I like a little bit of a bite to the soup. 1 cup of fresh chopped dill. I know it sounds like a lot. It's a whole big bunch, washed and chopped, but it really makes the soup. 1/2 a cup of chopped fresh parsley, 2 cups of broccoli florets, and that, you know, wasn't in any of the other traditional borscht recipes, but I just wanted green in there. Juice of 1 lemon, 3 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, and then sour cream is optional for serving. Traditionally, borscht is served with a little dollop of sour cream on top. So first you're going to start by bringing 10 cups of water to a boil in a large stock pot. Meanwhile, you can saute the onions in olive oil for about 5 minutes until they start wilting. Add the celery and the potatoes and cook those for 5 more minutes, also till they start to get a little soft. Add all but 1/2 cup of the shredded beets. So I have a whole bunch of the shredded beets. You're using 4 beets. I hold back 1/2 a cup, and I want to just stir that in right before serving to really bring out that red flavor, but really the red color. So hold those 1/2 a cup of the beets back. So you can put the beets and the carrots into the pan along with some garlic and cook for a few more minutes until that's softened. Then you're going to add all those sautéed vegetables to the pot of boiling water along with the bay leaf, the oregano, the yellow pepper, and the cabbage. Then you can add the cannellini beans, the marinara tomato sauce, the canned tomatoes, and the herbs. And bring that to a boil. Once it's boiling, lower the heat and let it simmer for about 40 minutes. And then I add the broccoli at the end because I really want the broccoli to stay bright green. So 5 minutes before you're going to serve it, put the broccoli into the soup and let that cook. Also taste it and adjust the spices, whether it needs more salt or pepper. If you want to add more dill or a little more oregano, you can do that at this time. And then right when you're ready to serve it, you're going to squeeze in the fresh lemon juice and the apple cider vinegar. Serve it up. If you want to put a dollop of sour cream in each bowl, you can do that as well. And that's it. Please, I love feedback. Let me know how you liked it and share it far and wide. Okay. So now it's my pleasure to introduce Jill Talve. She's a clinical Ayurvedic specialist and a Panchakarma specialist, and we'll have to find out what that is. She's the owner and operator of Everveda, which is an Ayurveda wellness center here in Oyster Bay on Long Island. And she offers consultations, healing therapies, She creates custom herbal remedies for people. She also gives cooking classes and has a Meals That Heal program where she designs and prepares meals specifically designed for individuals who are looking to improve their health, kind of like what I do. She's also on the faculty of the California College of Ayurveda and a certified yoga instructor. And Jill is really passionate about what she does, and I'm really thrilled to have her on with us. Jill, are you with me?
I'm with you.
Great. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's my pleasure.
I'm a real fan of your newsletter and your website and all the great work you do, so thanks a lot.
Thank you. So just in case I have listeners that don't know what Ayurveda is, can you share that with everybody?
Yeah, most certainly. Yes, Ayurveda is actually translated from Sanskrit. It actually means the knowledge or wisdom, which is Veda, of life or health. So it's really the science of living. And it's a complete medical paradigm that's been in existence for thousands of years. It's really known as the mother of all healing modalities. And it has its roots in the Vedas, along with yoga, which are old Indian texts. And I guess the best way to explain Ayurveda is that, according to Ayurveda, we create and recreate our state of health every day based on how we interact with the world in terms of our beliefs, our perceptions, thoughts, and feelings, which will ultimately determine our actions. And the actions in harmony with our inner nature will create health, while those that are disharmonious with our nature will create disease.
Mm-hmm.
So Ayurveda uses a lot of protocols and lifestyle choices, and particularly focuses on the nature of what we ingest, not only with food, but with senses. Everything that we ingest every day that will, that affects us. And as we do that, we can create health by just making sure that everything that we do is in harmony with the environment around us.
Mm-hmm. Now, they break the different constitutions of people's constitution into four different doshas, right? Can you explain what those are?
Well, it's actually three different doshas.
Three, sorry.
Because what it's based on is what really basically all medicine is based on, and that is the elements. You know, the elements of the environment. There are five essential elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And this changes a little bit in different modalities. Like in Chinese medicine, the elements are a little bit different. But essentially what Ayurveda does is it organizes these elements into three forces, and they're called doshas. And your constitution, or someone's inner nature, is actually the unique balance of these three basic energies. And these energies are known as Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. And each one represents a set of emotions and of physical attributes that we all have, but in different ratios to each other. So it makes up a different, a unique individual. And since these forces interact with each other, and they each have attributes, for example, if you have a lot of earth in your system, which means that you have a lot of solid matter. Your bone structure is heavy. You've got lots of mucus in the body. You have extra tissue. You know, you have more soft features. You've got a low mellifluous voice. You have a very grounded nature. You know, these are all attributes of having an earthy personality, and sometimes people are regarded as that. Oh, you know, she's so down to earth. I mean, those kinds of things are in the language to describe someone that has a lot of earth in their constitution. And what Ayurveda knows is that opposites will balance each other. So if you have a lot of groundedness and you have a lot of earthiness, then maybe in extreme, in excess, this characteristic can become more lethargy or too much mucus, which would cause a lot of congestion, or too much tissue that may cause weight gain. There's a heaviness in the mind, which may cause depression. That's earth in the extreme. So what Ayurveda says is find the opposing element that helps to lighten up this characteristic. And so a person with a lot of earth may look to do put more movement into their life, may look for more a little bit more heat to actually activate and to move the mucus through the body. Does that make sense?
Not fully. How would you add heat to someone's body to do that?
That's a good question. So to add heat to somebody's body is simply by maybe through spices, through mm-hmm. more pungent spices like black pepper or heating spices like cinnamon or turmeric in their diet. Another uh-huh. way, a simple way to add heat to your constitution or to, you know, your state of being at that moment is to move, is to just do some movement, whether it's some yoga asana or a walk through the park or a little bit of exercise. Something that gets the body moving is always going to introduce heat into the body. Uh-huh. And many people that have a lot of earth, well, like attracts like, so they may want to just continue being calm and quiet and grounded, and it's not in their natural nature to want to get up and move around, but this is indeed what they need to do in order to keep themselves in balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's just an example of one element, but these doshas represent all five elements. And so each dosha needs to be balanced in order to create and sustain optimal health, both uh-huh. in the mind and the body.
Uh huh. And how do you decide what dosha somebody is? Are there, you know, do you look at their eyes, their tongue, or do reflexology? Like, how does that work?
Right. Well, that's all of the above. In an intake session, a practitioner will sit down with a patient and will actually take an entire intake of their daily practices, of their physical stature, because very often you can see through someone's physical characteristics what elements are really, what doshas are really present. And that actually is also a way of seeing someone's long-term characteristics, you know, whether they're tall and skinny and their bones are very thin and porous, which show that they have a lot of air. Someone who's got red, flaming red hair and a luster under the skin will show that they've got more heat, more fire. But then you dig into their emotional well-being, their long-term characteristics there, how they've been sleeping, both long-term and short-term, so you can identify what's natural in the person, what's their authentic nature, and then what might be out of balance currently, presently.
Uh-huh.
And so the intake is usually about 2 hours long.
Hello?
So 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So it's a little, so it's not a standard doctor's appointment. It's actually a long process. And we really get into everything, so because we're really talking about the total person and treating the total human being.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think Ayurveda has become so relevant at this time, or you know, has become or gaining popularity in this country?
Well, it's really gained a lot of momentum throughout the years, especially here in the West. And I believe that's because our Western medical community is really number one in terms of research and diagnosis and treatment. But where we've kind of had to sacrifice or compromise is in preventative medicine and also in post-trauma treatment and in chronic diseases that keep coming back, things like diabetes and arthritis and all forms of arthritis and, you know, chronic sinusitis and all the itises in Western, in the Western community are chronic situations where you're not really getting to the root of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Ayurveda does is it works with somebody one-on-one and working with their unique situation and teaching them how to do some daily practices and looking at their digestion, looking at what they eat every day and what they take in through other senses, what they're watching and what they're hearing and what they're reading, without taking them out of their lives, but just to give them some more self-awareness. So they can make these choices every day so they can continue to be in balance, which will prevent disease and which can bring you out of a very long traumatic experience. For example, people who have gone through chemo and post-cancer treatment, you know, to return back to your original state is it could be difficult and challenging for people. You've been through this transforming situation and, you know, this transformative experience, and it may leave you in a place where you're not quite sure where to go from here. You know, do I just go back to my old habits? You know, how did I get here in the first place? And so Ayurveda offers a way to return to your life after some kind of trauma and to look at it and to be able to be responsible for your own health, which is something that we need more and more since, you know, the Western community is undergoing such a big change.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't watch TV much, but I've been actually with my cousin quite a bit who's in the hospital right now who does have cancer and is going, you know, really the Western route. And, you know, so I'm visiting her in the hospital. I'm watching the TV is on all the time, and I cannot believe, and I actually asked whether they had all the drug advertisements because they were in the hospital, like whether they had their own special, you know, advertisement stream. And they said, no, I mean, this is normal. I am shocked. When I was a kid, they didn't have advertisements for all these drugs. I am shocked that every other one, Lyrica and this
one.
I mean, I just cannot believe the advertising. You know, and then ask your doctor, you know, these might be right for you. And then, you know, 100 miles an hour, they go, but it could cause death, and it could cause this, and it could. And I'm like, oh, my God. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
That obviously they're spending millions of dollars on all these advertisements, so it must help. And so you must have all these people that go running to their doctors and say, how about this medicine? How about that medicine? And they're self-prescribing, and you know, I always say follow the money because you don't think it's possible, but when you really look behind so many of these ads or these drugs or their programs, you know, there's connections between a company that you thought might have been okay and another one. You know, last week I was talking about Coca-Cola, who paid for all the website money to the American Pediatric Association. And, you know, came out this big supportive relationship that the American Pediatric Association has with Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Even though they say that, you know, sugary drinks add to the obesity epidemic with children, and yet they're in bed together.
Yeah.
And it's scary, you know. So you can't really believe anything that you hear. You need to really... You know, one thing that is good about the Internet is that we can be empowered to do our own little research and find out, you know, what's really at the source of things. But it's scary. It's really scary.
And yeah, so it sure is. And it's not, it's not only follow the money, it's follow the study. Because a lot of these medications that are necessary, there are many, many people who are benefiting from these types of medications. But at the same time, there are herbal medicines and there are plant medicines given in the proper form and in the proper dosage are just as effective, and they're available to everyone. And that's the problem. The problem is that they're not proprietary. So many of the studies that are done on synthetic medicines cannot be done on herbal medicines because they're not funded by the pharmaceutical companies the way that these proprietary medicines are funded, and the studies that actually, you know, are always advertised along with the usefulness of the drug. So now, through private funding and university funding and sheer demand of the population saying, hey, well, what? Why can't I just take turmeric for anti-inflammatory issues? And, you know, what is if I'm hearing about Gotu Kola and St. John's Wort and some of the other medications that, you know, might serve me and metabolize better within my body than these other pharmaceuticals that have this laundry list of side effects?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm seeing... On the positive side, I'm seeing a bit of a shift finally where universities and private funding are getting the clinical evidence needed in order to let the population make a responsible choice and say, okay, you know, and Ayurveda lets you look through a lens where you can make decisions instead of just listening to the commercials and saying, well, this is the answer to all my problems. You know, mm-hmm. So Ayurveda teaches you to understand your body well enough that you can say, you know, it may make more sense for me to, since my metabolism isn't so good and I don't digest so well, I have stomach issues, maybe I shouldn't take another pill. You know, maybe I should add some different spices to my food and see if that's going to move my digestion along. And maybe
or
I should
chew slower and chew more.
And chew consciously. And maybe
right.
not watch the 6 o'clock news while I'm eating dinner. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not only what you're ingesting through your mouth, it's what you're watching on TV. And if you listen, you know, and not to say that you shouldn't be informed, but eating while watching something violent or having a distressing conversation or even reading something that's disturbing, you know, that's not going to be good for your digestion, quite simply, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these are the things that are simple things that over time as a daily practice will really change the infrastructure of your health, will really change your life. And
mm-hmm.
make and give you clarity to be able to decide when an important medication should really be introduced to you, or maybe I can just stabilize my condition through herbal medicines, through other protocols that would help without
right.
side effects. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to take a couple minute break. When we come back, I'd like to go in a little bit more in depth at what you actually do at Ayurveda. Is that how you say it?
Ayurveda. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. What you actually do there and how you work your practice. So everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Jill Tell from Ayurveda, and we'll be right back.
Garden we tend.
The mind is a hive of memes.
The mind is a monkey who needs to chill.
The mind is a magic deck.
The mind is a web, and you are a spider.
Looking for in-depth conversations about mysticism and mind science?
Technology and visionary experience?
Religion and uncanny culture?
Tune in to Expanding Minds.
With Eric Davis.
And Maja Daou.
On the Progressive Radio Network.
Or download us on iTunes.
And remember,
keep your mind open. story behind the story, your story, my story. It's all in the mix on Lead Stories right here on PRN.FM. This is Eutrice Lead inviting you to share your thoughts and opinions and expand your knowledge about critical issues of the day, Monday through Friday, right after Gary Null's show. Listen live to a broadcast or get Lead Stories whenever you want from PRN's archive. You can even rate the show on iTunes. Now pass the word. Tell the story to everyone you know. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
We are PRN. 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 Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest today, Jill Tal from Everveda. Jill, are you with me?
Yes, I'm with you.
Great. So I know you touched on that if somebody was to come to your center, you would start with an intake session that would take about 2 hours, correct?
Correct.
So during that 2 hours, do you actually decide what their dosha is in that amount of time?
Well, the appointment is actually 3 hours because there is a follow-up appointment that happens a few days later after I take all the information down and we have our session together. Then I kind of sit with the material and work with maybe some of the current medications that they might be taking or whatever they're doing. And then when they come back to me, I give them, we develop a long-term strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, and at that point, we discuss that person's unique constitution, and we do a little bit of teaching on what Ayurveda is all about, because at the end of the day, it's about teaching somebody this philosophy and how to look at themselves through an Ayurvedic lens. So then ultimately they can make choices for themselves. And so they can balance their health every day rather than waiting until something is so out of balance that it becomes a symptom and it manifests somewhere in the body. And that's when you go to the doctor. That's kind of what our culture has been up to this point, but this way, you know, you can kind of notice if your digestion's a little bit out of whack or if something, your mind is a little agitated in the morning, there are things that you can do to kind of help keep that in balance so it doesn't get too out of balance.
Mm-hmm.
So that third appointment is really where we handle that long-term strategy together.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry, I just wanted to go back because you said there's, you know, the five elements of the environment: earth, water, fire, air, and ether.
Right.
But there's only three doshas. So do they leave one off, or are all of the doshas combinations of the different forces in different balance?
That's
correct.
And
if they are, can you explain that to us, what each
sure.
one is?
Sure. So I had mentioned before, I had described some of the attributes of someone that had a lot of earth in their constitution. And the first dosha, kapha, which is earth and water together, creates this very heavy, dense type of energy that is very grounded and very nurturing and compassionate on the one hand, in balance. But out of balance can, especially in excess, can give you problems such as lethargy and excess congestion and swelling and water retention and bloating and those kinds of things that have to do with too much water, too much earth, too much heaviness.
Mm-hmm.
The next dosha is the combination of fire and water, and that's called pitta. And in balance, you know, fire is a very direct, very hot. It's really the only element that gives heat. Everything else is inherently cold in the universe. But mm-hmm. it's from direct sunlight or fire that we actually experience heat. And that provides transformation. So Pitta is the dosha that is responsible for metabolism, the transformation of anything, whether it's your digestive system, whether it's cellular metabolism, or whether it's perception of thought. So somebody with a lot of fire, well, you can hear that in the language, somebody that could be a hothead or has a fire in their belly, they can be ambitious, driven, very clear. Leaders tend to have a lot of pitta in their constitution. But on the other hand, all that clarity and logic and good digestion can also be a little bit, in its extreme form, can cause acid reflux. It can cause diarrhea. It can cause impatience, arrogance, aggression. Usually with somebody that has a lot of pitta in their constitution, if you go to them with a problem, they're gonna say, here's what you do. I mean, they're very, very definitive, and the truth and logic is very important to them. Mm-hmm. So that would be the pitta dosha. And then the vata dosha is air and ether. So that, of course, is the lightest, the most mobile quality. And vata is responsible for everything that moves in the body. So it moves the other elements. So, for example, circulation in the body relates to the vata dosha. So if you're having an inspiration, again, the language showing you that there's air involved, you know, the enthusiasm. Somebody with a bubbly nature has a lot of vata because there's a lot of air, a lot of movement. There's creativity of thought is vata. So many people that are vata are also very artistic and creative. But, of mm-hmm. course, they need the pitta to produce something, and they need the kapha, the tenacity, to carry it through. So each dosha represents something that is necessary, you know, for human life. And when vata is out of balance, it could be something like fear or anxiety. You know, the movement is too much. Your thoughts are going too fast without any groundedness. Mm-hmm. So vata out of balance can also cause problems with circulation, cold hands and feet. Constipation, dryness, because movement, too much air, is going to cause dryness. So those uh-huh. are the three doshas as it applies to the human being. But we have, but these energies apply to the whole universe. If I'm describing kapha as this wet, heavy energy, you know, and that has a lot of tissue, a lot of growing, then the kapha time of life is when you're first a child, is childhood, adolescence. And that's why adolescents have a lot of snotty, you know, congestion and stuff, because this is their kapha time of life. The kapha time of year is spring, when you have all that moisture and heaviness. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, pitta time of life is right in the middle, right when you're producing everything. You've got your jobs, you've got your home, you've got your kids, you've got everything going on at the same time. The pitta time of life is in the middle of your life, when you're the most productive, the most energetic, the most driven. Mm-hmm. And the pitta time of year, of course, with heat, is summer. Right. And then finally, the vata time of life, well, that's at the end of your life, when you become more reflective, when we get lighter anyway, right? We start to deteriorate. Our tissues start to get thinner regardless of what we're doing, although we try our best to keep ourselves healthy and strong. The natural way of things is to kind of move into the ether. And the vata right. time of year is now, that cold, dry time, the end of the cycle, when the leaves are falling off the trees to begin again.
Uh-huh. So when would the winter be?
Well, again, fall and winter, early winter, is going to be vata time. when it's still dry and cold. And then right about when Groundhog Day happens, we may not see it here in the Northeast, but underneath the ground is when kapha starts to accumulate, is when the roots start to gain energy again, and they start to gather the energy so we can break through in the spring.
Right.
And the snow starts to melt and the heaviness starts to happen. That's when around February, March, people are starting to want to really nest, really nestle in, anxious for spring, but, you know, they kind of feel the heaviness that kapha starts to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the seasons somewhat overlap when it comes to doshas.
Right.
Kapha lasts until about the early summer, and then pitta takes over until the late, until about now, depending on, you know, of course, the weather is all wonky these days, but we you can still see the essential patterns
right.
that exist.
Mm-hmm. And so most people don't have just one dosha, right? There's some combination of each, correct?
So we each have our own unique constitution of these three doshas. We can't really live without any one of them. We're made up of all these elements. It's really to understand what our unique constitution is. If you have a lot of kapha, for example, like I was describing before, you tend to be grounded. You tend to be maybe a little on the rounder side in terms of a body makeup and constitution. You tend to like sweet things. Because, like I said, the heaviness is what you're attracted to, and the groundedness and the nurturing is what you're attracted to. You'll still have drive, you'll still have pitta, and you'll still have vata, but you may have just more of two doshas than of all three. And if you understand that, then you can look at what may be imbalanced. Here's a perfect example. Here's somebody who, a client came into me the other day, and she, you know, she was new, and she said, you know, I just don't sleep well. I'm not sleeping the way I'm, you know, I just have never, in the past couple of years, really gotten a good night's sleep. And I said, well, how much sleep do you get? She said, about 7 hours.
Wow.
And I'm remembering that, you know, a previous client was lucky if she had 4 hours.
Right.
But for somebody who has a lot of kapha and who's always slept really, really well, that's out of balance for them. And that means that something is going on that we can maybe look at. And maybe it's a lot of coffee, a lot of stimulants during the day. Maybe it's doing a lot of computer work late at night. But there are different things that you can look at now under this lens and say, well, you know, do I have to just accept that I don't sleep like I used to sleep? Maybe, but what are some of the things I can do to kind of bring myself back in balance?
Right, right. Wow, it's so interesting. And so, you know, this service is so valuable. Is it recognized by our insurance companies? Let me take a guess. But
good guess.
You know, I mean, it just seems, you know, in the long run, if people that really were making decisions had a wider viewpoint, they'd see that in the long run, this could save them a lot of money, because if people got themselves in balance, they wouldn't get so sick. But I'm sure
that's true. But here's the good news. The good news is that insurance companies see that. They see that it's viable, because they don't have to pay these enormous claims if they've got more of a healthy constituency, right? So
right.
A healthier demographic. So as a matter of course, some larger insurance companies, I think Kaiser is one of them, they have an integrative department, health department, and they are starting to look at that. Should some of these other modalities like Ayurveda become insurable? And the truth is that in California, there is an organization that's solely devoted to the licensure of Ayurveda, because there are so many practitioners there. And it's really a matter of one state taking the plunge, because, you know, it's troublesome for a state. They have to, first of all, they have to throw money at any new modality that's being licensed, because then they have to worry about enforcing it. and they have to get involved with continuing education, and so it costs the state money to license. But
right.
at the same, but that's, but you see, this is following the same suit as acupuncture and chiropractic, and so the very first step is to have a national board exam for practitioners, because as it stands right now, somebody who takes a 3-month program in Ayurveda and somebody who takes a 4-year program in Ayurveda can both be considered Ayurvedic practitioners. And people who have been trained in Ayurveda with a BAMS degree in India can't even practice here under regular license unless they're a physician.
Uh-huh.
So once that, and NAMA is the organization that represents all Ayurveda in this country, the National Ayurvedic Medical Association. And they are an association that is actually implementing that statewide board exam next year. And
uh-huh.
once that exam happens and the quality of practitioners are regulated, that's what the state needs in order for the whole program, the whole process to move forward. So we will see licensure soon, especially since it's in so much demand, and there's definitely support from a national organization and from the practitioners themselves, the membership
uh-huh.
themselves. So hopefully
right.
we'll see that in the next couple of years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I've seen how acupuncture has changed. I mean, you know, they didn't have the licensing here at first either. And that's really has come around a lot and
yes.
is being recognized more. Now, how is Ayurveda and yoga connected? Other
well,
than they both come out of India.
Right, right. Well, they come out of the same scriptures. And as a result, you know, they're both rooted in these scriptures. And so while yoga can express through its 8 limbs or categories, you know, the moral teachings, the asana, the breathing exercises, what they call pranayama, the meditation. Those are the necessary practices in order to achieve what yoga will say, the self-realization with your higher self. I mean, that,
mm-hmm.
the pursuit of enlightenment is really
mm-hmm.
the purpose of yoga. And we're And so what goes alongside of yoga is Ayurveda, because Ayurveda is expressly concerned with harmonious action of the mind and body so that a person can pursue their yoga. So
uh-huh.
where yoga is the end all to, you know, really achieve that access into your inner wisdom, into your inner self, Ayurveda helps preserve the body and mind so that you can pursue those goals.
Uh-huh. I know as a natural food chef, I have cooked for some people who are following an Ayurvedic diet and they will not eat garlic or onions. Is that for all people who are on a Ayurvedic diet, or is that just for these particular people that I was cooking for?
Right. In that case, that is probably, that's more a religious decision. So because Ayurveda has its roots in India, anyone following a Jain diet or a Hindu diet, certain parts of Hinduism, and then those who have adapted some of those protocols, who may not even be from India, can be not wanting to disturb the root structure of a vegetable, and so they won't eat onion or garlic. On the other hand, onion and garlic have, as does every food, have properties, qualities, and they can be very stimulating and what we call rajasic, which can be very, you know, it can kind of bring up the fire a little bit in the body and in the mind. So some people will choose not to eat that because of the properties of the food. But in Ayurveda, it's really based on you. It's based on your unique needs, your unique desires. What's good for you may not be good for the person next to you. And
uh-huh.
that's why sometimes when we're sorting through the internet, like you mentioned before, there are 1,000 recommendations on how to be healthy. this is good for you, this is not good for you, coconut oil is bad, coconut oil is good, butter is bad, butter is good. Nobody, you know, it's very hard to sort through all that stuff. But once you know who you are, and once you know what's good for you and what balances you, well, then you can choose which things suit you. So you can eat meat and be Ayurvedic. You can, you know, you can, I mean, junk food, processed food, that's off the table no matter what. But when we're talking
right.
about the realm of real food, uh-huh. everything is accessible. It just, you just have to understand when and how and in what form.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Do you have a book that you would recommend? You know, if people wanted to learn more about Ayurvedics, is there a book that, you know, was like a, you know, a beginner's book for the basics that you would recommend?
Well, there are some, yes, there are some wonderful books out that have been written by lots of wonderful people. Dr. Claudia Welch has some great books on Ayurveda. There's also Vasant Lad, who's a very well-known Ayurvedic physician who lives here and had started the Ayurvedic Institute. He's written several books on Ayurveda. And Dr. Mark Halpern, who is the founder of California College of Ayurveda, wrote a book called Healing Your Life, which is a wonderful book that talks about his own journey and how he found Ayurveda after battling with years and years of syndromes like chronic fatigue syndrome and other issues that were very chronic and getting in the way of his life and how Ayurveda healed him. Mm-hmm. And then there are wonderful websites that if you were just to Google Ayurveda, you would see Ayurveda Next Door, which is a post, a bulletin board of means that where many practitioners kind of contribute to this bulletin board and talk about Ayurveda on a regular basis. So it's really becoming accessible, and you can always go to my website. That's www.everveda.com. We're always updating the site with different types of information. I also want to mention that here at Everveda, we also do healing therapies. The traditional therapies that go along with the Ayurvedic protocols. So aside from just food, we actually can give you different guidance in how to when you wake up in the morning, what kind of practices will help stimulate digestion or help balance digestion, what herbs would help you, and we also do some different treatments here that support your journey into Ayurveda and to help you balance, you know, stay in balance.
And you also do cleanses, correct?
Well, yes, personal cleanses, because like I said, everybody's different and it's hard to do cleanses on a, you know, in a group setting unless everyone
right.
is on their own individual plan. But that's what Panchakarma is, by the way. Panchakarma is, in Sanskrit, that means five actions, but it's truly the way that Ayurveda does a detox. But the difference, and what's really important to know, is detox, everybody knows, but it's retox. It's the reintroduction of foods after you've gone through a cleansing that is critical. And we tend to forget that.
Well, I think everyone's going to have to go on your website to find out personally, because we are out of time. But, Jill, I want to thank you for joining us, and I'm sorry to cut it so short. We'll have to do
no
it
problem.
Again.
Sorry.
And everybody out there, thank you for joining us. It's been wonderful to have you, and look forward to being with you again next week. Bye for now.